All right, welcome back to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Robert Johnson, a York Rite Mason and Knight Templar. Well, last week, the Android app went live, and it was a good feeling. I had been working out some bugs with it. I created the splash screen and had to come up with some of the artwork, mostly pulled from websites and converted them for the app. Anyway, it was some hard work, and it's nice to see that it's finally available for all the listeners out there. If you're on the website, you can just click the droid with the apron, and it will take you right to the app page where you can buy it for $2. And again, all that money that we get from the sale goes right back into the show. And of that $2, 60 cents goes to Android, and 70 cents goes to the folks who built the app, and the other 70 cents goes to the show. And don't be afraid, once you download it and you like it or don't like it, whatever you want to do, go ahead and rate the app. Let our software team that wrote the app know what you like and what you don't. Don't be afraid to review the app, please. Moving on, this week we're going to dive deep into the Scottish Rite. We'll have a small paper, again from the Illinois Freemasonry magazine, and another famous Freemason segment. So moving right along, the following is the history of the Scottish Rite read directly from the Scottish Rite's website, which is scottishrite.org, the official website of the Scottish Rite. A note, the material is taken from S. Brent Morris's The Complete Idiot's Guide to Freemasonry, Chapter 9, The Scottish Rite, New York, Alpha Books, Penguin, 2006, copyright by S. Brent Morris, all rights reserved. The Origins of the Scottish Rite. Like so much early Masonic history, the origins of the Scottish Rite are hidden in mystery. There's evidence that by the early 1730s in England, there were Scottish Masons, or Scottish Master Masons, a step after the Master Mason degree, and apparently unrelated to Scotland. By 1742, in Berlin, there was talk of a higher or so-called Scottish Masonry. In 1743, the Grand Lodge of France adopted a regulation limiting the privileges of Scots masters and lodges. It's clear from these few mentions that something was going on behind the scenes with Scottish Masonry, but we're not quite sure what. These developments were happening at the same time the Royal Arch was gestating before its birth in 1754. It's even possible that the Royal Arch and the Scottish Masonry came from the same sources. We just don't know. What we do know is that the high degrees found fertile ground where they were introduced to Freemasonry. In 1745, 2 years after restricting Scottish Masons, the Grand Lodge of France gave them special privileges. And more privileges and authority followed in 1747 and 1755. In contrast, the Royal Arch appears in Lodge Minutes in America in 1753 and England in 1758 with little official notice. By 1766, we know that an elaborate sequence of high degrees or Scottish Masonry is being worked in France. There's much activity prior to 1766 that we'll cover later, but we want to take a look now at that sequence of high degrees. Competition is the force that drives the world's economies, and it also seems to have driven Scottish Masonry in France, which became part of a jockeying for power within the Grand Lodge of France. The Council of the Knights of the East, Sovereign Prince Masons, was organized in 1756 and included in its government middle-class Masons who had been excluded in previous high degrees ventures. It is not known how many degrees the Knights worked, but they seem to have faded out around 1768-1779. Coming on the heels of the Knights of the East in 1758 was the Sovereign Council of Emperors of the East and West, the Sublime Scottish Mother Lodge. The emperors attracted the upper class and nobility and competed with the knights in the number of degrees they offered. And just from a marketing point of view, the newer group bested the older. The emperors are more powerful than knights, and East and West is twice as extensive as only East. The invention of Stephen Morin. In August of 1761, Stephen Morin received a patent from the Grand Lodge of France authorizing and empowering him to establish perfect and sublime masonry in all parts of the word, etc., etc. Morin was a wine merchant from Bordeaux and set up business in Santo Domingo in what is now the Dominican Republic in the Caribbean. Morin is little remembered for his wine business, but his Masonic activities have gained him long-lasting fame. It took Morin about 15 months to make it from France to Santo Domingo, arriving in January of 1763 because his ship was captured by the English and he was taken to England. While we know that he arrived with a patent of authority over the High Degrees, we don't know how many or which High Degrees he controlled. What we do know is that he met a Dutch merchant, Henry Andrew Fracken, and made him a deputy inspector general sometime between 1763 and 1767. Fracken in turn traveled to Albany, New York, and created there a Lodge of Perfection, 4 through the 14th degree, in 1767. In addition to creating the Albany Lodge of Perfection, Fracken at least 4 times copied all his degrees into books, 1771, 1783, and 2 undated versions. The Fracken manuscripts contain the earliest English versions of the 21 degrees from 4th Secret Master to 25th the Royal Secret of Knights of St. Andrews, the faithful guardians of the sacred treasure, a 25-degree system, with the first 3 degrees conferred in blue lodges. This should establish conclusively that Morin worked a system of 25 degrees, right? Well, only if the degrees that Morin gave to Fracken are the same ones that he received in France. There's a growing evidence that Morin took whatever high degrees he had received in France and refashioned them into the Order of the Royal Secret, creating additional degrees as needed. The governing document, the Constitution of 1762, has been discovered by Masonic scholar Alan Bernheim to be a slightly modified version of the Constitution of the Grand Lodge of France. Morin apparently acted to create a new Masonic body with himself as the only Grand Inspector. The First Supreme Council, Charleston in 1801. However, the 25-degree order of the Royal Secret came into being, it proved popular. These French high degrees, unlike the English York Rite, were spread by traveling inspectors who conferred them for a fee. It wasn't necessary to wait for enough Masons in town to receive the high degrees somewhere else, and for them to apply for a charter. The initiate inspector could take care of everything as soon as he arrived. 8 bodies of the Royal Secret were formed in America before 1800. From New Orleans to Albany, the weakness of the order proved to be the unchecked system of inspector generals. Each inspector general could confer the degrees on master masons, establish local bodies, and create new inspectors, all for an appropriate fee. There were no guidelines or costs, no limitation on numbers, and no restriction on how many more inspectors an inspector could create. By 1800, there were over 80 inspector general, and the system was moving toward chaos. Then on May 31st, 1801, the First Supreme Council of the 33rd Degree, the Mother Council of the World, declared the existence with one motto, Ordo ab Chao, order from chaos. It announced a new 33-degree system of high degrees that incorporated all 25 order of the Royal Secret and added 8 more, including that of the 33rd Sovereign Grand Inspector General. The new organization declared control of high-degree masonry in America. The new Supreme Council had written constitution and a plan for organizing them and managing the bodies under its control. The problem it faced was how to reign in the roving inspector general. The solution was shrewd and depended upon convincing the inspectors to voluntarily yield allegiance to the Supreme Council. Any inspector of the 25th would be given authority to confer up to the 32nd degree. The extra 7 degrees would make his product more attractive. If he turned in his old patent and agreed to follow the rules of the Supreme Council, this strategy was reasonably successful, and independent inspector generals soon disappeared. The Second American Supreme Council, New York, 1806. The Charleston Supreme Council had organized itself according to the Grand Constitution of the 33rd degree, purportedly written by Frederick the Great of Prussia in 1786. The Constitution provided for one Supreme Council in each country, except that of the United States of America could have up to 2. This is an odd provision for a document supposedly originating in Prussia in 1786. The decision to create a second American Supreme Council was unexpectedly thrust upon the Supreme Council in Charleston. The second Supreme Council in the world was established in Santo Domingo in 1802, a fitting return to Stephen Morin's home. This Supreme Council died with the slave revolt on the island, but one of its members, Antoine Bedeau, fled to New York. While there, he came across 5 Frenchmen who were interested in the high degrees. For a fee of $46 in 1806, about $565 in 2000, Bedeau conferred the degrees upon his customers and formed them into a consistory of the 32nd degree, all without the knowledge of the Charleston Supreme Council. The same year, Bedeau was creating his consistory Joseph Cerneau, a French jeweler, moved from Cuba to New York City. He had a patent from the inspector of the Order of Royal Secret that gave him limited powers in Cuba, but That didn't stop him from setting up his own consistory in New York City. Carnot operated without saying much about whether he had 25 or 32 degree consistory. Emmanuel de la Mata, the grand treasurer from the Charleston Supreme Council, arrived in New York City in 1813, examined the two competing factions, and decided against Cernot. De la Mata regularized Badeau's group and transformed them into the Supreme Council for America, now known as the Northern Masonic Jurisdiction, and consisting of 15 Midwestern and Northeastern states, from Wisconsin and Illinois, northeast to Maine. The original Supreme Council, or Southern Jurisdiction, is composed of the other 35 states plus the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico. All regular Supreme Councils of the world today descend from the Mother Supreme Council of Charleston. So more information to follow on that next week. Moving on, this week's paper is a short one, also from the Illinois Freemason magazine, and it's entitled The Hidden Treasures by Mike Allen, past master of Pacific Lodge No. 66. After watching The Da Vinci Code and National Treasure, I somehow feel that my ancient brethren have kept a secret from me. I am only kidding, of course. These stories are truthfully masterful and held our interest both as movies and because we are Masons and our fraternal organizations were depicted as keepers of the Templar treasure. I have been a Mason for over 40 years, and it was about 25 years ago, while serving as worshipful master of the Pacific Lodge No. 66, Knoxville, Illinois, that I learned of our hidden treasures. As master of the lodge, I took it upon myself to research old meeting records dating back to the start of Pacific Lodge when it was founded in 1849. I found many remarkable facts about what our brethren did back in the 1800s, how they brought spittoons for the officer stations, and how the tiler who was in charge of heating and cleaning the lodge recommended that the brethren buy slippers to wear in the lodge so he didn't have to clean up the mud, as Knoxville was a dirt street in town at that time. With great interest, I read where those brothers bought officer jewels, and how the jewels were described. While going through old boxes of what I thought was junk, I came across those boxed original jewels. We had a brother at that time that was by trade a bricklayer. After I showed them to him and he described what I had found, he asked to take them home, and with tender loving care, polished and returned them to the lodge in their original splendor. He also mentioned that they were made of a very good quality of silver. Our lodge purchased a display case and proudly displayed them for many years. But as we all know, silver tarnishes and darkens over the years. A recently raised brother, also a silversmith by trade, saw the jewels in our display case and asked to take them home and polish them. With permission of the lodge, he took the jewels home to once again be cleaned. At that time, he thought that the officer jewels might have been worth $2,000. After he cleaned them and he brought them back, he said that he thought he had underestimated their value and were probably worth more in the $4,000 range. The whole point of this story is that I have been to many of the older lodges in the area and have seen similar old jewels on display. Of course, most are tarnished and really don't look like they are valuable at all. Brothers, we have untold hidden treasures in our lodges and don't even realize it. Please take the time to see if treasures that are put away somewhere might be silver and very valuable. If they are, you need to see that they are properly insured and protected. We have many older lodges that need to merge or are close to it because of financial relations. Perhaps the sale of these hidden treasures, along with others such as old altars, officers' chairs, lesser lights, and old Masonic paraphernalia, might help with lodge finances. Whatever you do, make sure everything is documented and insured in case of an unexpected tragedy. So let's hear it. Do you guys have old treasures in your lodges? Today it seems when some lodges join with others or when we buy a new building, as both of these happened to my lodge, a ton of these treasures are boxed and they're stored in a stony, cold basement. I found some great things when we did spring cleaning 2 years ago. I found a flag with 48 stars on it. I found a Masonic filament light bulb and plans for the city that we lived in. It was really neat. Anyway, on to this week's famous Freemason. Last week's was kind of a shocker for some. If you didn't catch it, go check it out. This week's brother is Scotty Maurice Pippen. Born September 25th in 1965, is a retired American professional basketball player who played in the National Basketball Association. He is most remembered for his time with the Chicago Bulls, with whom he was instrumental in six NBA championships and their record 1995-96 season of 72 wins. Pippen, along with Michael Jordan, played an important role in transforming the Bulls team into a vehicle for popularizing the NBA around the world during the 1990s. Considered one of the best small forwards of all time, Pippen was named to the NBA All-Defensive First Team 8 times, all consecutive, and the All-NBA First Team 3 times. He was a 7-time NBA All-Star, and was the NBA All-Star Game MVP in 1994. He was named one of the 50th greatest players in the NBA history during 1996-97 season, and is one of 4 players to have his jersey retired by the Chicago Bulls, the others being Jerry Sloan, Bob Love, and Michael Jordan. During his 17-year career, he played 12 seasons with the Chicago Bulls, 1 with the Houston Rockets, and 4 with the Portland Trailblazers, making the postseason 16 straight times. He is 3rd on the list of most postseason games played, behind Robert Horry and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Pippen is also the only person to have twice won both NBA championships and Olympic gold medals in the same year. Pippen was inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame in 2010 on August 13th. So it is known that Scottie Pippen is a Prince Hall Freemason, but I couldn't find any information on what lodge he belonged to. Again, if you know, please go ahead and comment on the blog or on the Facebook page. That's it for this week. Always remember, the show is available on just about every way possible. Tune into the website at www.wcypodcast.blogspot.com, which is, of course, our blog page with Google Blogger. Available there are links to the RSS with Google's Feedburner, iTunes, which the link will take you to the show within the iTunes market. Facebook, also a link to that is on our page, and if you like the show, you can listen via the Flash Player right there in Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at WhenceCameU, and add us to your circle on Google Plus at WCYPodcast@gmail.com. Also email us at that address as well. Remember, the Android app is available now and in the Android market, and there is a link to that on the website as well. Just click on the droid icon that's wearing the Masonic apron. It'll allow you to buy it right there on your computer, and it will automatically download to your Android phone. The nice part about the app is that it means no more syncing for you guys. It's all streaming anytime, anywhere. There is also bonus content like wallpapers hand-picked by the show and the original PDF research papers. And you're helping out the show with your purchase. All that money goes right back into the show to bring you top-notch material. Next week, we'll continue our information on the Scottish Rite, another paper, and another famous Freemason. If there's any topics that you want us to add, change, let us know. We'll work it out. Till then, be safe, have a great week. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.